Israel has again moved to annex more areas of Jerusalem Al-Quds. It announced to build 300,000 illegal settler units in Al-Quds as part of the so-called Greater Jerusalem. This may seal the fate of Al-Quds, but Hamas's leader, Ismail Haniyeh, has made new revelations. In this edition of The Debate, we will look at how Israel is continuing to Judaize the holy city while breaking down some of the revelations by Hamas leader about Al-Quds, like breaking it down into three parts, north, middle, and south, while establishing a political entity inside the Gaza Strip with certain privileges.
Israel's Ministry of Housing and Construction has started a campaign to pressure lawmakers into passing a bill for building 300,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. The plan, which is part of the so-called Great Jerusalem Bill, aims to ensure a Jewish majority for Jerusalem Al-Quds. If passed by the Israeli Knesset, the bill will allow the construction of three illegal settlements that will be annexed to the Al-Quds municipality and house 140,000 Israeli settlers. Three new municipalities will be then allocated to the 100,000 Palestinian citizens of East Jerusalem Al-Quds, but eventually they will be cut off from the city by Israel's separation wall. The Israeli campaign comes 3 weeks after U.S. President Donald Trump's declaration of Jerusalem Al-Quds as Israel's capital. The Palestinian Authority has stated that it holds the American president responsible for Israel's brazen activities.
The ministry affirms that this Israeli colonial arrogance would not have happened without U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Trump's administration must bear the responsibility for new crimes that Israel, the occupying country, imposes on our people.
Gaza-based resistance movements, Hamas, has also accused the United States of trying to force Palestinians to withdraw their claim on the holy city.
The United States offered to give the Palestinian Authority a capital or entity in the Abu Dis area, far from Al-Quds, so that there is a bridge linking Abu Dis and Al-Aqsa Mosque. There is also talk about dividing Jerusalem into three parts, north, middle, and south, and establishing a political entity inside the Gaza Strip, which has certain privileges. This is the solution that America sees for our cause.
Haniyeh has noted that Trump's declaration is part of a big American project.
This decision is part of a large battle that aims to determine or eliminate the Palestinian cause, and that's what is called the deal of the century.
Trump's decision has fueled the already high tensions in the occupied territories, but the U.S. has made it clear that it is not planning to change its decision. National Criminal Court to confront Israel's expansionism, but it is unclear if they are willing to enter the six.
And we have author and political commentator Jeffrey Alderman, who also joins us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. And Jeffrey Alderman, let me first start with you. You have a major announcement that has been made now on the heels of the U.S. announcement of the recognition of Al-Quds as Israel's capital. Which one do you think is more illegal, the announcement from the U.S. or from Israel, who has announced that it will build 300,000 settler units in Al-Quds as part of what it calls so-called Greater Jerusalem?
The American announcement by Professor Trump, by President Trump, was designed mainly for domestic consumption, because in 1995, the American Congress had already legislated for the move of the American embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and for recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Now, if you want to characterize President Trump's announcement as illegal, of course, you're free to do so. But in terms of American law, he was simply following the law of the land. But I stress again, his announcement was primarily for domestic consumption, not for international consumption. So far as the Israeli proposed legislation is concerned, of course, it's not actually enacted at the moment. But I think if I were a betting man, I would put some money on it being enacted. And this is part of the present Israeli government's policy so far as Jerusalem and the Greater Jerusalem area are concerned.
So is that illegal, that announcement, 300,000?
Under international law, ethnic Jews have the right to settle, in principle, in any part of what was Mandate Palestine, west, I repeat, west of the Jordan River. So in terms of international law, it's actually not illegal at all.
Okay, Hafsakar Mustafa, your reaction to Jeffrey Alderman there.
Well, under Nazi rule in Germany, it was perfectly legal to round up Jews and send them to concentration camps. Up until the 19th century in the US, it was perfectly legal to buy and sell human beings who were black as slaves. So the definition of legality doesn't in any way make it moral. And I think here we have a question of morality. Now, we know for a fact that Zionism is a supremacist, racist ideology that completely neglects the rights of the indigenous population of Palestine. And therefore, in a Zionist's mindset, it is perfectly legal to annex Palestinian land, exclude Palestinians from living where they have lived and their ancestors have lived for many, many centuries. And it makes it perfectly acceptable. But of course, it is not only acceptable, not only is it illegal under international law, but of course, it is morally reprehensible. And I think it's the immorality of what the government of Benjamin Netanyahu and of his sidekick, President Trump, are doing that is really very important to analyze. And of course, the fact that it's wrong is at the center of this discussion.
Jeffrey Alderman, do you think that Israel makes this type of an announcement, to use the words of our guest, Hafsakar Mustafa, to his sidekick, the U.S., with U.S.'s consent? Do they approve this?
I find it difficult to believe that the Israeli government would not have made this announcement had they not firstly informed the White House in advance, and secondly, got some sort of indication from the White House that this would be okay. My own view is that probably they did get some sort of verbal approbation from the White House that it was okay to go ahead with this announcement.
Hafsakar Mustafa, then is the U.S. trying to push itself to be sidelined as a mediator when it comes to the peace process? Because if what Jeffrey Alderman says is true, it's just another reason to look at the U.S. as not being impartial.
Well, I think that's been a reality for all those who've observed the Palestinian issue over the past 70 years, that America was never a sort of honest broker. And I think there's been a sort of hypocrisy worldwide to actually expect it to be an honest broker when we know that all American presidents are beholden to the very powerful pro-Israel lobbies such as IPAC, such as the Anti-Defamation League. So in essence, I think what Donald Trump has actually achieved, and to his credit, is almost to say very openly that America is very pro-Israel and this is where we stand. And I think in a sense it's very good for the Palestinian cause because it no longer forces them to actually have to deal with America. America and Israel are almost blended into one. And once we've fully acknowledged that, we can realize that there's no point in engaging with America, as we've seen in last week's vote on the UN and Jerusalem's capital, whereby the two are one and the same. Once we've accepted that there's no point in distinguishing between the two, we can move forward and actually engage in some sort of looking for a resolution of the Palestinian issue with people who are genuinely interested in the well-being of human beings, in the human rights of those who are currently being oppressed and colonized.
Jeffrey Alderman, lots of talks has been circulating, and it's just mere talks and some reports, but I'm not too sure whether to take them at face value or not. And that is about how the U.S. may indeed not be one of the mediators to pave the way for Saudi Arabia to become that. And thus, in a sense, then Saudi Arabia and Israel would have a reason to come forward with their relationship that has been behind the scenes. How credible are those reports?
I would regard that as, broadly speaking, credible. Clearly, the Palestinian leadership has written off the USA as a quote honest broker unquote, and President Trump, I think probably factored this in, doesn't really care. I said at the beginning of this program that his announcement on Jerusalem was made for primarily for a domestic audience, and I stick by that. In my view, President Trump is looking towards his re-election for a second term, and he wants to get not so much the Jewish lobbies on board as the Christian Zionist lobbies. And it was very symbolic that behind Trump, when he made that White House announcement, was Vice President Pence standing right behind him, and Vice President Pence represents the Christian Zionist lobby. Now, as to Saudi Arabia, I think this is very interesting. Look, let's admit, to all intents and purposes, there are diplomatic relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And the only peace plan in town, as it were, is the Saudi initiative. And I think that has some mileage in it. The Saudis are as fearful of the Iranian regime as the Israelis are and as the American administration is. And I would not be at all surprised if in the new secular year 2018, the Saudis ramped up their position as the next best thing to an honest broker in this dispute.
It's interesting how you call Saudi Arabia Saudi Arabia, not a regime like you indicated Iran is, which it's not. Hafsakar Mustafa, tell us what you have heard about what this peace process is, or what this peace plan, I should say, is, because obviously we're going to get into some of the details that I have, but I'd like to first hear from you what you have heard.
Well, I think I have no doubt that Saudi Arabia wants to move forward into the negotiations and actually come across as the best broker in the deal. But I think we have to also look at the reaction from the Arab world. I think the Saudis believe that because of their incredible wealth that they sort of carry some weight in the region. But I think it's important to note that public opinion across the Arab world is incredibly hostile to the Saudi regime. Everything that it has engaged in has been an absolute catastrophe, not only for the Muslim world, but also for Arab countries. It has meddled very inefficiently in the Syrian crisis. It is currently destroying and bombing poor women and children in Yemen. It obviously supported the NATO-led onslaught on Libya. So even as an Arab country, putting aside the Islamic sort of element to it, even as an Arab country, it is proving to be incredibly hostile to Arab unity, and as a result, public opinion in the Arab world has turned very much against Saudi Arabia, and rightly so. So any offer that is going to come from a regime that is considered to be corrupt, to be immoral, is going to be rejected. And of course, if they take the next step, which is to engage and fully and openly cooperate with Israel, I think it will be their undoing, because we've already seen them cooperate with the worst enemies of the region in order to destroy the unity that was there in the past. If they take a step further and actually...
...was made for primarily for a domestic audience, and I stick by that. In my view, President Trump is looking towards his re-election for a second term, and he wants to get not so much the Jewish lobbies on board as the Christian Zionist lobbies. And it was very symbolic that behind Trump, when he made that White House announcement, was Vice President Pence standing right behind him. And Vice President Pence represents the Christian Zionist lobby. Now, as to Saudi Arabia, I think this is very interesting. Look, let's admit, to all intents and purposes, there are diplomatic relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And the only peace plan in town, as it were, is the Saudi initiative. And I think that has some mileage in it. The Saudis are as fearful of the Iranian regime as the Israelis are and as the American administration is. And I would not be at all surprised if in the new secular year 2018, the Saudis ramped up their position as the next best thing to an honest broker in this dispute.
It's interesting how you call Saudi Arabia Saudi Arabia, not a regime like you indicated Iran is, which it's not. Hafsakar Mustafa, tell us what you have heard about what this peace process is, or what this peace plan, I should say, is, because obviously we're going to get into some of the details that I have, but I'd like to first hear from you what you have heard.
Well, I think I have no doubt that Saudi Arabia wants to move forward into the negotiations and actually come across as the best broker in the deal. But I think we have to also look at the reaction from the Arab world. I think the Saudis believe that because of their incredible wealth that they sort of carry some weight in the region. But I think it's important to note that public opinion across the Arab world is incredibly hostile to the Saudi regime. Everything that it has engaged in has been an absolute catastrophe, not only for the Muslim world, but also for Arab countries. It has meddled very inefficiently in the Syrian crisis. It is currently destroying and bombing poor women and children in Yemen. It obviously supported the NATO-led onslaught on Libya. So even as an Arab country, putting aside the Islamic sort of element to it, even as an Arab country, it is proving to be incredibly hostile to Arab unity, and as a result, public opinion in the Arab world has turned very much against Saudi Arabia, and rightly so. So any offer that is going to come from a regime that is considered to be corrupt, to be immoral, is going to be rejected. And of course, if they take the next step, which is to engage and fully and openly cooperate with Israel, I think it will be their undoing, because we've already seen them cooperate with the worst enemies of the region in order to destroy the unity that was there in the past. If they take a step further and actually engage and recognize Israel, I think it can almost be seen as a mixed blessing, because I think it will trigger the start of their undoing.
Well, Jeffrey Alderman, Palestinians would get a state of their own, but only non-contiguous parts of the West Bank, limited sovereignty, settlements to remain, Jerusalem al-Quds to be Israel's capital, and there would be no right of return. That's what the New York Times reported just weeks ago. And that left many wondering that if Saudi Arabia was doing the bidding, because according to that article, the White House denied that report.
Of course, the White House may deny that report, but I think some of the elements of what might emerge as the Saudi initiative were contained in that article. There is not going to be any recognition of the quote right of return unquote of the areas of the West Bank currently under direct or indirect Israeli control, areas A and B under the agreements will become a Palestinian state, and area C in terms of a land swap will, to all intents and purposes, be annexed to Israel. That's my broad understanding of the outlines of the Saudi initiative. I'm fully prepared to believe that if the Saudis press ahead with this initiative, it will, how can I put it, devalue their currency in the Arab world. I think that's a distinct possibility. Apparently, it's a risk that Riyadh is prepared to run.
A lot of risk with this new prince. Well, let's look at what Hamas's leader has said, Hafsakar Mustafa Ismail Haniya, today. He said the U.S. offered to give Palestinian Authority a capital or entity in the Abu Dis area, which is far from Jerusalem al-Quds, so that there is a bridge linking Abu Dis and Al-Aqsa Mosque, also talking about dividing Jerusalem into three parts, north, middle, and south, giving the Gaza Strip a political entity with certain privileges, of which Ismail Haniya completely rejected. It doesn't sound like Palestinians are going to get much, especially when you have announcements of 300,000 of these illegal houses to be built in Al-Quds. This is from Hafsakar Mustafa.
Sorry, there's no way the Palestinians...
Go ahead, Hafsakar Mustafa, I'm sorry.
There's no way the Palestinians are going to agree to this ridiculous deal, primarily because they've been suffering for the past 70 years, and it would be utterly ridiculous that after all this weight and all this suffering to agree to something that is simply non-viable. This is not even a state. These are sort of like little entities that are ungovernable, that won't have any sort of legal rights as any normal state would, and they would still remain almost under the thumb of Israel without even forcing Israel to have any form of responsibility that international law forces a colonial power to have on the colonial people colonizers as such. So this is an agreement that is utterly ridiculous. It's not surprising that it would actually have the blessing of the most corrupt leadership in the Arab world, which is of course the Saudi regime. But of course, I think the Palestinians not only will reject it, and rightly so, but I think it will give them that much needed momentum to sort of re-trigger and re-support their cause with the same fervor that they had pre-Arab Spring. Because what we have to know is that the Arab Spring has actually impacted the Palestinian cause for various reasons, which we won't go into today, of course. But I think this latest move by Trump, and of course the treachery of Saudi Arabia, has actually implied, has pushed and given Palestinians the impetus to move forward their cause and move it in the right direction.
Well, Jeffrey Alderman, if Palestinians are not going to accept this, what's going to happen? I mean, what are we looking at when it comes to what's the reality on the ground? If that was to be the reality, obviously you're going to have a lot of resistance, and we can see where resistance leads when it comes to, for example, the recognition of Al-Quds. Right now, it's been weeks of protests that are happening.
There have indeed been weeks of protests, but what's happened? Nothing has happened, except that there have been some deaths and some violence. Look, I'm a pessimist on this issue in the medium term. In the short to medium term, I don't think anyone with any sense of rationality can talk about conflict resolution here. In my view, the very most we can hope for is conflict management. There'll be outbreaks of violence, protests, then they'll die down, then there'll be a period of relative tranquility, then there'll be another so-called uprising, then that will die down. I think for the foreseeable future, that is the only scenario we can rationally envisage.
I need to get a reaction from you, because we're quickly running out of time, Hafsakar Mustafa, to what Ismail Haniya said, and this is his statement. I'm going to quote him. This is also part of a big battle to change the entire region in the Middle East, not just the Palestinian situation. And so there are statements about what is called regional peace. What do you think he means there?
I think he means that Israel has been very active in destabilizing many Arab countries, creating very much working on the divide and rule politics of colonialism. So we've seen, for instance, Israelis support the Kurds in places like Iraq and Syria. We've seen them supporting and funding and providing health care to Daesh in Syria. All of these organizations that are designed to sort of break down Arab nations are being supported, and behind the scene there is an Israeli element behind every single one of these scenarios. And I think this is what he means. Coming back, just picking up on what Mr. Alderman said about the sort of conflict management over the coming years, I have to admit, I think he's absolutely right. I think what we're going to see is sort of upsurges of violence and the return to peace and then violence again. But the key here is for Palestinians to keep steadfast. They should not make any concessions. It's very important that they don't make any concessions, because when Palestinians make concessions, it gives opportunities to some Arab sellout leadership, such as the Saudi leadership, to say, well, if the Palestinians are making concessions, why shouldn't we? And therefore, it is very important for the Palestinians to remain committed to their cause and to the full independence of their entire country. And in terms of conflict resolution, of course, this is going to go on for quite a few years to come. But then, of course, Muslims lost for two centuries Jerusalem. But in the end, Muslims always gained it back.
We're going to end it there. Thank you very much, journalist and Middle East analyst Hafsakar Mustafa. And thank you, author and political commentator Jeffrey Alderman, both talking to us from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Ikava Tabway and the entire team in the capital of Tehran, it's goodbye.